There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Friday, live at Dean McCreary Mazda on the East I-65 Service Road. And I've seen the text and calls, too, and no, we don't know exactly what is on fire. We're working on that as soon as we find out what that is. I tell you this, so I talked to a friend of mine who's come across the Bayway. He could see it off to his west. Like I just said, we're here at Dean McCreary Mazda on the north side of Government, and I can see that smoke to my south. So we're at least two legs of the triangle here. We're working on getting this figured out for you, and we'll let you know when we get more information, and we'll pass along here and on our social media platforms. All right, I mentioned Dean McCreary Mazda, and oh, by the way, Kelly is out here as well, because Greg, she has brought back White Lightning.
She has brought back White Lightning.
White Lightning.
I get a kick out of what she names her cars, and you know, she's really passionate about it. Actually,
she is. I don't think I've ever had a name for a vehicle of mine, and she's named every one of the Mazdas she's had here from the lot, and she really seems to like this Mazda 3 White Lightning.
Yeah, she does. And I was going to tell you before you got started to be really careful with your lead in questions to me. Keep them kind of mild, because I am fired up today, and
yes,
there's no telling what's going to come out of my mouth, so be careful what you ask me.
Come on now. And by the way, talking to Greg Warrington with Dean McCreary Mazda, you know the FCC charges us per fired up occurrence, right? Okay. So listen, your lot is looking full, and that's saying something, because Mazda, as you've taught me over time, is a limited production vehicle. They're not. That's why you don't see them everywhere on the road.
Yeah, it is, and it's called a turn and earn allocation, right? The more you sell, the more you get.
Okay. Right? Aha. Hence, so, there's more vehicles on the lot.
That's right, and we really do. We actually have our best selection that we've had all year. Right now, we've got plenty of CX-5s, 2018s. We got plenty of 2018 Mazda 3s, 6s, CX-3s. And CX-9s.
And so, and for those people that aren't schooled in this like you, when you talk about those, which ones are the SUVs, which ones are the sedan, which ones are the sporty roadster like Kelly drove?
Yeah, anything with a C in front of it is an SUV.
Okay, so the Cs, when I'm talking about Mazda, Cs are SUVs.
Right, that's correct.
And, you know, I know when Kelly was driving these SUVs in the past, she did some great videos that are on our social media platforms, and she stress tested them like families do, groceries, kids, stuff, and they really took the load.
Yeah, and that's obviously the whole point of letting her drive it. We want her to give us an honest evaluation in a real world situation, right? You can come down and you can go on a demo drive, and we'll let you do what you want to do, and we'll go through all the equipment and let you put it through its paces. But it's nice to have somebody that's actually driving the car for an extended period of time,
right,
and really taking it to the grocery store and
right,
doing all the things that you do. And that really gives you an honest evaluation of the car.
Well, this is great. People, best way to do it here, come out and see the vehicles. Also, check out those videos on the East I-65 Service Road. People want to get online and look. Where do they go?
That's easy, guy. DeanMcCreary.com.
Okay.
Yeah, really.
And you check out there, and I'm sure they can get your phone number there. If they're looking at that, say, hey, do you have this one in gray, or do you have this one? They can come and kind of look at the colors.
Right, yeah. I mean, everybody knows you can get a hold of us real easy at 800-304-DEAN. That's 3326. Or call me on my direct line. Look, I'm here every day.
And I can attest to that, y'all.
and you know, I love to interact with the customers. I like to be involved in every single transaction.
Yes.
And my direct line is 251-300-3459.
All right, Greg, as always, great to have us. Great to be out here with you and have some Jersey Mike sandwiches.
I will. Looking forward to
lunch.
It.
All right, y'all do that. Do like we're doing. Getting a great lunch from Jersey Mike's out here. Some FM Talk 106.5. The new run of the Huggers are out. I took some of those inside, so stop in, get a sandwich, get a Hugger, get yourself a nice cold water, and check out what is happening at Dean McCreary Mazda. Come back and visit with us here in just a little bit.
We will.
All right, very good. Coming back after the break, Baldwin County Sheriff Hoss Mack joins us. You might have heard some discussion about additional school resource officers being brought in. I think 17 was the number for Baldwin County Schools, to where each Baldwin County school, at least projected each Baldwin County school by the 2018-2019 school year, will have a SRO, a school resource officer, attached to that school. We'll find out more details from the sheriff coming up in just a little bit about that. Also, Bill Britt from the Alabama Political Reporter joins us. We'll talk to Bill coming up at 12:35. It's been quite a week when it comes to Alabama politics, and really not even elected officials. It's been the Business Council of Alabama. It's been Alabama Power's departure, and some other big players, the big mules, leaving the Business Council of Alabama. What does it all mean? Bill Britt will talk about that. And also, yeah, we will look at the politics going on right now in those runoff races. I know it's tough. It's midsummer. You felt like you voted. Now it's time to just wait for November. But in fact, runoffs coming up next month on July 17th. So a lot to talk about with that. All right, 1213 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. I tell you what, and back in the studio, Philip, I don't know exactly what's happening, but what we'll do is when you get a good juncture point here, let's go ahead and run to the break. I don't know why we what's going on, but if you go ahead and press a button when I say this is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. Good to talk to, man, I don't get to talk to enough. I'm going to start remedying that in the future. Baldwin County Sheriff Hoss Mack joining us right now. Thanks for your time, Sheriff.
Hey, no problem. Glad to participate and talk to you this morning.
Yeah, and a lot of questions I have, and I know when I talked about it this morning, quite a few texts from our listeners as well. With the announcement coming out, a kind of group effort in Baldwin County to put more school resource officers in Baldwin County schools.
Yes, there has been. We've actually been working on this latest proposal that was discussed last night at the school board meeting for, I guess, now about 4 months. We had a large meeting following the Parkland, Florida shooting. We had already had some things in place that were a discussion, but I think that was kind of the point in time that really ramped the discussions up and led to this proposal that we discussed last night.
Well, you know, in the aftermath of Parkland, there are a lot of discussions of, you know, what to do. It seems like there are dozens of ideas out there. There's some of them that are being debated, you know, at the in Montgomery and Washington and elsewhere. But it seems like what you're talking about doing here, and just an expansion of what you're already doing in Baldwin County, is obviously common sense, but can be done quick. This is not something that has to be on a 5-year plan. Y'all are doing this now.
That's correct. You know, with any program that you participate in, you know, you have to start out in the funding arena. How are you going to fund it? And so while the Board of Education and the County Commission started working on that aspect a little over 3 months ago, they tasked me to get with all the chiefs of police in Baldwin County and work on the operational aspect of the program. And then once we kind of had an agreement that we really we're going to continue what we were doing in Baldwin County, which was following the school resource officer model program that we've probably had now in Baldwin County for about 10 years between various schools in our county. It was then decided that the County Board of Education would be approached about the possibility of funding those resource officers with the goal that was stated at that time, and we hope to realize in this upcoming school year, is that there will be at least one certified school resource officer on every public school campus in Baldwin County.
No, Sheriff.
Sheriff, when you say certified, what does it take to be certified? Kind of describe to us a school resource officer's qualifications.
Sure. First, they have to be a law enforcement officer as certified in the state of Alabama by the Alabama Peace Officer Standard Training Commission. That means that they're a full-time, fully employed, certified law enforcement officer. Then secondly, the officer has to, or as we step up into this program, at least within 1 year, complete training by the National Association of School Resource Officers in their basic SRO program. That program is a 40-hour classroom program whereby police officers and deputy sheriffs are schooled in the aspects of what we call school policing. and that deals not only with applicable criminal laws, but it also deals with child behavior, drug and substance abuse, bullying, academic challenges, physical, mental challenges that the children may have depending on their particular situation, the school environment, the academic environment, school programs, and those different things. And then each year, certified SROs, once they complete the basic class, have the opportunity to participate in two additional classes of 40 hours each.
Okay, so that's those men and women that are in our schools, that's the qualifications, that's the minimum.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, that is the minimum for the SROs. And, of course, there's other programs that we bring in through our SRO program, the Drug Awareness and Resistance Education Program, commonly referred to as DARE. We have that initiative. Of course, an officer to be able to teach that has to become a DARE instructor. Once again, that's another 40 hours of education with a continuing education component each year to remain on that. There are a multitude of other programs that can be brought in to those. Some are partnered with other agencies, such as a lot of our school resource officers are certified CPR instructors, so they teach CPR in the classrooms. And just different partnerships that we have, depending on the schools they may be assigned to. Obviously, there is some difference from elementary to intermediate, middle, and high school environments.
When you've listed these things, I think it's good for people to hear, because a school resource officer, right now in our discussion, we're thinking, you know, that final line of protection for our children there at the school. But it is not just that. Thank goodness it's not a common occurrence where school is attacked, but it's all these other things that may be more day in and day out at a school.
Well, that's correct. Obviously, we all concede that what has pushed the conversation forward has been the occurrence of active shooters on our school campuses. But the likelihood of encountering an active shooter, particularly in our region of the country, is very, very minimal. It does exist, but we deal with children every day. And so in that, our school resource officers on a daily basis have encountered situations such as suspected child abuse, sexual abuse, child neglect, educational problems, drug problems, juvenile issues, bullying, threatening, all those kind of things that children from their home environment or community environment bring to the schools with them when they come to the schools. And so what the school resource officer program, if I could sum it up really into three words, is intervention for prevention. And the model is, if we can intervene, get to know the kids, get to know the situation, learn a little bit about it, and we prevent anything from happening, then that's the success.
And now, as of the 2018-2019 school year, then there will be SRO in every Baldwin County school. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. There's 44 public school campuses in Baldwin County. Last year, at the end of the year, we had about 27 of those campuses covered. And the reason I say about, some of our municipalities only covered those campuses on a part-time basis versus a full-time basis. What we propose to the board, and what the board has conceded to partner with the county commission and all of law enforcement in Baldwin County, is a salary reimbursement program whereby the board will fund at least one school resource officer for all of those 44 counties. So we'll roughly be stepping up about 16 or 17 school resource officers, so that at least as we get into the academic year, going into this next year, we should have 44 school resource officers in Baldwin County at a minimum.
Just guessing here, you can tell me from your perspective, that doesn't seem like it would be a hard sell to be sheriff. It seems like if in today's environment, while we're still obviously watching dollars and cents, I mean, that seems like an adequate use and a responsible use of revenue.
Yes, the concept is relatively easy to sell, but we wanted to focus, even while the concept was easy to sell, we wanted to focus to make sure that we were being consistent and that we were offering a very good program, and we wanted buy-in by all of our municipalities. Our municipalities just about have 12 municipalities in Baldwin County. Every municipality in our county has a school, at least an elementary school, And they have all been, for the past several years, been carrying that on their own. We wanted to not only increase the program whereby we had officers on campuses that they didn't, but also to enhance the existing programs. And so a collaborative effort to agree on common training, to agree on common goal, common purpose. And as I said, all of our chiefs have met, and we have all agreed with what we want to do. And I think that was, even though the concept of having a school resource officer on every campus was very palatable to the board, once they heard how we were going to do it and what we were going to do with that program, was also favorable.
All right. People want to get more information about this or anything else with the Baldwin County Sheriff's Department. How do they reach out to y'all?
Certainly. You know, we actually have, first of all, Facebook. Our school resource officers have a Facebook page. It's the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office School Resource Officer Facebook page. They can look that up. They can go to our website at www.sheriffofbaldwin.com. They can call our office, 251-937-0200, and ask for any of the information, whether it revolves around our school resource officer program, our Camp Shining Star, which we're currently involved in, which is our day camp for kids during the summer, or any of our other kids' programs. They can access any of those for that information.
You know, Sheriff, you just raised some eyebrows with the summer camp program, right? Because it's a couple weeks in, 3 weeks in now to a summer vacation, and there's some parents going, you know, I think the kids need to get out and do something outside this house.
Well, we do four camps a year. We just finished our last camp, which was our first camp. I'm sorry, the first camp we just finished it. It was at Rockwell Elementary School. We have another camp scheduled for in the north end of Baldwin County at the Baldwin County High School from July the 18th through July the 20th. We will be hosting our Central Baldwin School, which will be at the Central Baldwin Middle School, July the 25th through July the 27th. And then our final camp, Shining Star, will be at Fairhope Intermediate School, August the 1st through August the 3rd. These camps are for children 8 to 13 years of age. It is a three-day summer camp where we promote civic responsibility, school accountability. We talk about public safety. We talk about community involvement. There's an anti-bullying and anti-drug component. And then, of course, we throw in, as we say, with all those topics, we throw in a lot of fun. They get to participate hands-on in a lot of our different programs, and it's really a good camp. And we target that age of child because we feel in today's environment that is the applicable age. The average child is exposed to illegal drug use in our country at age 11.
Wow.
And so we wanted to focus on those kids that are at that pivotal age, really going from a child to a youth. And we've found great. This is our 10th year. We've been doing this for 10 years now in Baldwin County, and we've run over 3,500 students through the program.
Wow. And I mean, you got my attention, too. That age cell, that's my children are both within that age cell. And you said 11 years old for kids,
yes, sir,
being offered drugs?
11 years old. We've statistics over the past several years have once again, over and over again, show that a child's first involvement, whether it be with alcohol, marijuana, and unfortunately in today's environment, even such harder drugs as meth, ice, those different things, and even now, of course, you know, with prescription drugs, is at the age of 11.
Wow. You just, I think, help wake up a lot of parents out there. All right. I will get more information on the camp. People can go to the Facebook page. And what a great program. 10 years of that. I salute you.
Thank you, sir. It was a great partnership. And once again, that partnership really is probably one of the things that led to the most existing partnership with our school resource, because once again, that partnership has been a partnership between all, if you notice, all of the Camp Shining Stars are done on school campuses, which are vacant during the summer.
Right.
So it's been a partnership between the Sheriff's Office, local law enforcement, and our Board of Education.
Oh, well done, Sheriff Hossmack. Thank you for your time. Thanks for being on with us today.
All right, man. Have a great day.
Hey, as always, appreciate that. Baldwin County Sheriff Hossmack joining us right here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. And we're coming right back. Y'all stay close.
Talk for both sides of the bay. WAVH-FM, Daphne Mobile. You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. And we are live at Dean McCrary Mazda on the East I-65 Service Road. Hey, by the way, too, we are here under the 40 by 80 foot American flag, the biggest flag in the state of Alabama. I didn't know that. That's the kind of thing I need to put if I do a Alabama trivia book. I can put that in. But yeah, under the biggest flag, I just said, how big is that thing? They said, oh, it's 40 by 80. That's the biggest in Alabama. That's where we are, just north of government on the East I-65 Service Road. Stop by and see us. Kelly is here. Kelly Finley, who has dropped off her latest Mazda, the one she named White Lightning, and she's getting her next Mazda. So come out and check out the big selection here because, like Greg said earlier, best they've had in a long time. Big selection of Mazdas out here, and also maybe not as many Mazdas, but we do have a lot of sandwiches from our friends at Jersey Mike's on Dolphin Street. They've hooked us up, plus the new run of FM Talk 106.5 Huggers. And I'm cleaning out the library. I said it this morning. Lots of books out here that I'm not going to get to, and also some that maybe I had double copies of. I got, you know, Clark Howard's, some Clark Howard books. I've got the Hero Workouts book. I've got just a stack of books. Come on out. We'll get you hooked up with that. All right. I want to check in with my buddy Jeff Poore with Lanyap and Breitbart and Yellowhammer News and get your take on a couple different things. Jeff, thanks for making time for us.
Thanks for having me on.
So what just happened in Washington? I mean, I'm watching this, and I know I heard the president saying, hey, you know, we're going to need Democrat votes. We still have to have, I think, whatever it was, 10 Democrats or 15 Democrats on board. But I thought there was, at least earlier in the week, it seemed like there was this compromise bill thing that was going to work, and now it's dead on arrival.
Yeah, well, there were some questions about how, you know, the leadership race would be impacted, and then there's kind of a revolt behind the scenes over it, and I think the way Ryan was trying to do it, he's on his way out the door and trying to get it done. And I think, as it has been under Ryan's speakership in the past, they took a lot of things for granted, thinking they could get some of this stuff through. But they have never been particularly good at whipping the vote, especially with Steve Scalise's majority whip. So, yeah, I think it's kind of just a product of this House of Representatives and the way it's been led over the last few years.
Okay, well, I can understand part of that in saying that, you know, you have outgoing House Speaker Ryan, and it's tough to get any traction, right? If, you know, he's not going to be the Speaker going forward, you don't have to curry any favor with him. But it seems to me that Republicans at large definitely need a fix here on the border, as the President has pointed out, and you would think that particular Democrats. Now, obviously, there's going to be Democrats that are never going to go with Trump, even if he said, hey, I want to, you know, have the Congress pass a law that says the sun rises in the east. But there are Democrats that are in districts and areas that Trump won that you think, if ever, this would be a time for them to sign on with something for Trump and get something done on the border with separating families and all those questions. This would have been an easy layup.
Well, the Democrats had the opposite problem of the Republicans. They really do kind of follow along with what Nancy Pelosi wants to do. They don't have this trying to herd cat situation. They definitely are more solidified than the Republicans are. And that's why you don't have any. That's why you have a lot of more reluctant Democrats crossing the aisle than you do Republicans.
But aren't there enough? I guess my question is, how many Democrats out there in this 2018 midterm are running somewhere where Donald Trump won the presidency, and it may behoove them to do something, if seemingly reasonable here, to vote with the president on this? You know, to maybe curry some crossover vote favor, or is that just imaginary?
I think it's partially imaginary. I think the way the Democrats are still looking at this 2018 midterm is that it's an anti-Trump referendum, and you can't not be, you know, playing nice with Trump on this. So to me, that's that's the game plan, and that's why you don't have that sort of phenomenon on the Democratic side of the aisle.
So that leaves it where? I mean, would the if there's not the votes here, we have the president's executive action to do something about separating families, and we could talk a little bit about that. But that only goes so far, correct? I mean, are we back to Congress doing what they haven't done in the past, and that is correcting it in the legislative branch?
Yeah, that to me, it's going to have to be done with something else on the line, maybe through some kind of spending bill or something like that. That tends to be the only way Congress gets these highly publicized things done, is if there's money on the line, we've learned. So, I wonder, though, the president's executive order is probably open to some sort of legal challenges, and I think it could get bogged down. There's certainly that possibility. So anytime you do anything through executive order, not the legislative process, that's the result.
Right, and so that is that's the frustration, as people have lamented in the past, and I've been, you know, saying I think people on both sides of the aisle, wherever they stand on some issues like the legalized marijuana issue, I said they should be able to cheer the AG's office and others, you know, with enforcing those laws. It's going to make Congress eventually have to either, you know, double down and reinforce on the law or back off and say we have a different law. Well, the same thing on this front, that Congress should have fixed this in the past. The president is forcing their hand. And I guess I'm surprised, because I felt like that would be, with the pressure politically right now, politically and emotionally and all that around this issue, that it would have been enough to get something to happen in Washington. But here we go. I mean, it's back to the same old. Nothing changes.
Well, isn't the argument that the pressure politically is as a result of this? And you want to keep the pressure on the president because you're in a midterm election cycle. You want the pressure on the president, not the individual members. And I think a lot of Democrats look at this as sort of a wedge issue that they can use, dirty up the president, and by extension, dirty up the Republicans that are running for re-election in 2018.
Okay, so let's say this with the Republicans. If they could do it, if it could be done just with Republican support, because I understand the Democrats wanting to keep this as a albatross around the president's neck here, but the Republicans, I don't think they, I mean, I think they want this thing put to bed, wouldn't you? I mean, if I'm running for midterm re-election in any kind of light red, purple, or, you know, Lord knows, blue district, I want this put to bed.
I think it varies. I think it depends on what the cost is. There's the problem with these things is they try to throw in a bunch of other stuff and get a lot of other concessions. It's the same thing for Democrats, but there are Republicans that are pro, you know, immigration. They're very, maybe even pro illegal immigration to some extent, just because of the economic factors. So I don't know that that's necessarily the idea that they want to get it off the table. They kind of like making this the issue and running on it. And then, you know, but here's the other problem. If the Senate's not going to do anything, if it's going to be DOA in the Senate, and why would any Republican that's really, you know, vehemently anti-illegal immigration do anything to soften their stance?
No, you're spot on. I mean, we've seen it over the last couple of years, even more, all the activity in the House, and then things go to the Senate to die, right? I mean, Mitch McConnell must have a drawer on the bottom of his old school principal desk there that is so slammed full of bills that will never see the light of day. It's got to be runneth over. I mean, we can go down the list of things. So, yeah, that is a good point. If it's going to just die in the Senate, therefore don't negotiate. I don't know. I feel... that I saw this as being an easier get for the country, let alone the president, the country, than it seems to be now. So what happens with this executive order in place, no movement in Congress? What is the situation on the border going forward?
I think it's going to be an issue as long as Democrats think they got a winner here. But as Democrats often do, and they did it with the Russia thing, I think they overplay their hand on these things. And I think it just sends everybody's minds are sort of made up to really pay attention to this stuff about the border, about how it should be done, about what Trump's doing, about Trump himself, all these different things. And I think the play is for the middle, and the middle is not going to look at this like you and I, like we're talking about what's the definition of asylum, the rules of asylum. I think a lot of people are just going to look and say, hey, there's just a bunch of people trying to get across our border, and all Trump's trying to do is stop that. And I think there's a real possibility, maybe not completely across the board, but a real possibility that this doesn't work out as well as Democrats think it will.
And that is the question. I mean, I've seen a lot of polling, you know, outside of maybe their backyard there in Washington, that people, I think Americans are bothered. I know I am, by those pictures from on the border. But the idea of throwing, the country into chaos with, you know, no enforcement, I don't think that's an option anybody wants. And maybe the messaging gets out on the fact that I just wonder. I mean, would Democrats end up getting stuck with that any more family separations on the border, those kind of things that happen, would not have happened if a bill could have been passed in the meantime? So between now and November, I wonder if any way people are saying, hey, you know what, that's on the Democrats.
That's a tough message to sell, and I don't think you're going to get any help from the media.
No.
Maybe Donald Trump can do it in a tweet or something. But beyond that, to me, hanging this on the Democrats, with the Republicans have the Congress and the White House, it's going to be very tough.
Be a hat trick there. All right, we're coming right back. More with Jeff Poore from Lanyap, Breitbart, and Yellowhammer News. A story that's been talked about here in the last month or so. Martha Roby in a runoff, and her opponent said she was anti-Trump. And then President Trump tweeted something about that, and we'll tell you what it is when we get back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Dean McCrary Mazda on the East I-65 Service Road, and getting to talk to my friend Jeff Poore with Lanyap and Breitbart and Yellowhammer News. And Jeff, I got to ask you, because a story I saw earlier on the Alabama Newswire website here about Martha Roby and President Trump, and this goes into exactly what we've talked about in the past. You said, hey, there's this challenge. It's back to almost like a surrogate battle was during the Senate special with Strange and Roy Moore. It's, you know, who does Trump like? And President Trump went ahead and said who he liked.
Well, I certainly didn't expect him to back Bright, because Bobby Bright, just because he has the baggage of being a Democrat, having voted for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker. I know there's like Brian Lyman and the Montgomery Advertiser, some others say, well, that's as far as his allegiance to the Democratic Party went. But I think to a lot of people, that's enough. Bobby Bright's probably in this runoff because he has such ties to Montgomery, parts of Montgomery, and he has a lot of ties in Dale County, which is Ozark. So otherwise, we might be talking about Barry Moore or someone else. But I'm not totally surprised by this endorsement.
Okay, well, and I guess I need to back up for everybody. So we're talking about Martha Roby and her run here in AL3, right? That's three. Yeah, AL3.
AL2.
She's in the run. AL2. I'm sorry, AL2. And she's Bobby Bright's in the runoff with her, who said she, you know, pointed out that, well, she opposed Trump, and you know, and Martha Roby, like other Republicans, had spoken out against President Trump, or I don't know if it was after president, if he was elected, or while he's a candidate, but he was trying to use that to get people to vote for him. And then I think it does clear that up when the president himself tweets and tells you, you know, hey, Martha Roby has been consistent, reliable vote for Make America Great Again agenda.
Right, and the same thing happened with Mo Brooks. You know, remember Mo Brooks was a big backer of Ted Cruz and said some really awful things about Trump. Martha Roby's big fatal mistake was when she came out the day after, or when the Billy Bush Access Hollywood tape came out, and at a bizarrely timed press release calling on Trump to step aside and give the nomination to Mike Pence that next Saturday. Bradley Byrne did the same thing, but yet he still survives. And to me, I cannot figure out why these challengers think Martha Roby is always vulnerable. Every cycle she faces somebody wanting to take her, thinking she's vulnerable. We had Becky Gerritsen a couple of cycles ago, the woman who testified before Congress, called the Wisconsin Tea Party, was getting unfairly treated by the IRS. I know you've got to remember Rick Barber and Gather Your Armies viral commercial. She beat him. She always takes these people on, always beats them, yet they still come and try to challenge her on her right flank.
Well, it's I guess it puts that to bed, doesn't it? I mean, when you have the president tweet that out. I mean, that should be enough said, over and done. And let's go ahead and get to July 17th.
I didn't think that she was ever in danger with or without the Trump endorsement. Trump supporters were certainly not going to go with the guy that was voting for Nancy Pelosi, ran as a Democrat, and kind of rode the coattails of Barack Obama, to be honest, to get into office in 2008.
But you could have a situation that could keep people that would have voted for Roby from showing back up, maybe. I don't know if it was. If you say it was never in doubt, that's good. I'll take your word for it.
But the way these politicians are, they're always, I think they're a little antsy, a little quick to, you know, a little paranoid about. And they want to protect their turf, obviously, and I understand where they're coming from, needing this endorsement from Trump. But to me, I don't think they really needed it, but they got it.
We just have a minute and a half left here, but I got to ask you about as we're talking runoffs here. Now it's starting to, the ads are running, of course, on FM Talk 106.5 and on television elsewhere. This lieutenant governor's race seems to be getting ready for the slugfest going into that third week in July. It's and by the way, does the BCA Alabama Power story play in to the benefit or the loss of Twinkle Cavanaugh? Even though I know it's not for, she's not running for PSC, she's running for lieutenant governor. But does this harm her at all or benefit her?
Perhaps it makes her vulnerable. Ainsworth can make some hay out of it, but I don't see it being that big of an issue. People don't really understand it. It's not easy to understand, but it's not easy to understand to, like, sort of in a retail politics way, that I don't know that you can really make this a significant part of this campaign enough to where it's going to really move the direction of the votes.
All right, Jeff, as always, we appreciate it and appreciate your time. We'll talk next week, and we'll check in over the weekend, too. If they want to do that on Twitter, how do they find you?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
Thank you, man. Jeff Poor checking in, and we're rolling on. Another hour on the way, Midday Mobile on a Friday, and like I said, we are live at Dean McCrary Mazda in Mobile on the East I-65 Service Road, just north of Government. And if you stop on by, we have the new run of FM Talk 106.5 Huggers. We got those laid out right by the sandwiches from Jersey Mike Subs on Dolphin Street. Big thank you to the gang there for these great sandwiches. So come get lunch with us, and I have some FM Talk 106.5 goodies as well in the form. I got some books with me and some other items. So you want to get some logoed gear, we've got it right here at Dean McCrary Mazda in Mobile. All right. Oh, also, too, I mentioned that Alabama Newswire. Check that website out, and I will put that link up here, too, on my Twitter feed as we're looking for. It is a really cool deal. It's an aggregator. It's the idea of, like, how the Drudge Report does and all that with gathering stories so you don't have to read every paper, everything like that. Does the same thing for stories about Alabama. ALNewsWire.com. ALNewsWire.com. You see the stories right there. I'm looking at it on my phone now, but usually I look at it at the desktop in the studio, ALNewsWire.com. You can check it out, and let me know what you think. Send me a message on Twitter about that. Also coming up next hour, we're going to talk about another thing coming up next month, not just the runoff election, but something we can all get behind. Bipartisan support for the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. I think the 85th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. That's coming up, of course, in July. Justin Thompson from the JCs joins us here in just a little bit. Coming right back. More Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.